Thanks for listening to the Mornings with Carmen LaBurge podcast, made available thanks to support from listeners just like you.
Inspiring you to bring God back into the conversation of the day. This is Mornings with Carmen LaBurge on Faith Radio.
If we're gonna fly, we fly like eagles. Arms out wide. If we're gonna fear, we fear no evil. We will rise. By your power, we will go. By your spirit, we are bold. If we're gonna stand, we stand as giants. If we're gonna walk, we walk as lions.
It could have been a really, really horrible day. It didn't turn out that way. But it could have been a really, really horrible day. The FBI arrested an 18-year-old in Idaho after discovering what it termed a truly horrific and violent plot to attack churches this past weekend. This young man is affiliated with ISIS. According to the FBI, quote, his attack plan involved using flame-covered weapons, explosives, knives, a machete, a pipe, and ultimately firearms. This would-be terrorist stated it was his intention to die while killing others on behalf of ISIS. The story is long and complicated. The good news is it was thwarted. The bad news is this is what's raging in the hearts of some people, of individuals out there who desire not just to do harm to one other person, they desire to do harm in the name of terroristic violence. And they intend to do this evil, targeting specifically Christians in this case, churches. It could have been a really, really terrible day. The enemy is always prowling around looking for a way to devour. The enemy comes to kill and steal and destroy. Jesus comes that we might have life and have it abundantly. That's the juxtaposition of the Christian worldview over and against every other worldview. There are worldviews that seek to kill and steal and destroy, and there is one that leads to life. I'm Carmen LaBurge. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. This is the Faith Radio Network. Welcome to those of you who might just be joining us this morning. If this is if Faith Radio is new to you, or we are new in your community, we're thrilled to now be an active part of your day. We consider your time very, very precious, and you very precious as well. So thank you so much for sharing your life with us. We intend to make the gospel known always and in all ways that you might be more fully equipped to enter into this day as an ambassador of the King and the Kingdom in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. You can check us out at myfaithradio.com. We'd love to introduce ourselves. You could text the word welcome to 877-933-2484. Hey, if you're in the Twin Cities and you've got a little time to spend with me in person on Saturday, April the 20th, I'd love to get together with you. You can text the word meet, M-E-E-T, to that same number, 877-933-2484. And I'll be in Duluth on the afternoon of Sunday the 21st. So if you're in Duluth and you want to get together on that day, text the word Duluth to 877-933-2484. Space is limited, and we do have to give a number to those who are hosting these events. So let us know ASAP if you're able to join us. I talked yesterday, I think, we talked yesterday briefly about this imminent threat of Iran retaliating directly against Israel for actions Israel is taking against individuals who are leading by proxy the efforts of Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis. And so we're talking about Iran. The imminent nature of what's coming is important for us to be aware of. This is one of those things where you're like, you don't want to make people afraid, but you also want to make people aware. I feel a little bit like that when we talk about what the Bible says about the end, right? and the second coming of Jesus and the rapture. And when we talk about the prophecies of the book of Revelation, like, right, it's not about fear mongering. It is about making people aware in order that everybody might get ready. Because, like, the day is coming. It's literally coming. One day will be the day. I mean, one day is going to be the day that Jesus comes again to judge the living and the dead. I don't know what day that's going to be. Jesus said he didn't know what day it was going to be at that point. But any day could be the day, and one day will be the day. And so I thought, okay, it's not responsible of me to not tell you, to like withhold information, because I think it might be a little scary. But Israel is now actively preparing for an imminent direct attack from Iran. And I think we need to be aware of that. I think we need to anticipate what that is going to mean in terms of its cascading effects. And so let's be praying that the light of Christ would shine, that Christ would be made known, that as some seek to do evil, God would use it for his good, that God would get his glory in the midst of all of it. And let's be praying. Let's be praying for you and I to be ready. Like, right, one day will be the day. What's your rapture plan? Have you actually had the kinds of conversations that you need to be having about Christ? And are you living as a person who's prepared to die? And you say to yourself, well, you're talking about Iran and you're talking about Israel. Yes, but if you've read the end of the book, all the way to the end, you know that events in Israel do matter in terms of the unfolding of human history and the coming of the king and the kingdom. And so, this is not about living in fear. This is about living in expectation and awe and living as those who are prepared for what God has said is yet to come. Our friend Paul Acey from Focus on the Family's Plugged In is going to join us next. When you think about the screen savvy nature of yourself or your family, I mean, this is part of our conversation that we just had with our friend Chris Martin. How much time are you spending on your screen, on screens, looking at screens? And what does it look like for you as parents or grandparents and those who are influencing the lives of children who have been entrusted to you by God? You know, what does it look like for us to shepherd their heart? So becoming a screen savvy family is Focus on the Family's book that they have written on the topic. Paul Acey has been an integral part of that process and project. And so in addition to, you know, bringing us up to speed on all things on the big screen and small screen, we're going to talk a little bit about becoming a screen savvy family. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Our friend Paul Acey is back. He serves with Focus on the Family's Plugged In ministry. You can check it all out at pluggedin.com. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Carmen. How are you?
I'm good. I'm well. I didn't get enough sleep last night, but you know, that's probably my own fault.
You know, I'm amazed that you get enough sleep any night as early as you get up. Oh my goodness.
Sometimes the morning is just late. It's just actually late the other day. Yeah. So Bob Hoos, your colleague Bob Hoos, has this piece, Kids Just Want to Turn Off. Tell us what's going on. We live in a culture immersed in social media, but yeah, kids just want to turn off? Really?
Yeah, it is one of the most remarkable takeaways from a recent Pew Research study that asked kids how they felt about their technology and social media use. And as you might expect, the majority, but a very, very slim majority, said, you know what, we're doing just fine. I am fine with where I'm doing this stuff. But a good 40% of them actually said, you know what, I think I'm overusing this stuff a little bit too much. I'm using my phone more than I should. I'm on social media way more than I would like to be. And a lot of those kids who were polled actually said that they are wanting to cut back, which is fairly revolutionary. I mean, that's what parents have been asking them to do for, oh, how many years now? But kids themselves are starting to think, you know what, this may be getting a little bit out of control.
Yeah, I have a friend who has a at their front door. It has a like a little sign that they made that looks like a no gun sign, but it's a no phone zone. And
really,
when you're there, when you've come to visit, you got to drop off your phone.
Wow, that's revolutionary.
I mean, if you're here to be with me, then be with me. We don't need a phone to be together. So yeah. I just think that you know, you're going to do it. You're going to drop your phone in the basket at the door. You just are, because you really are there for the fellowship. You are. And it's so liberating. It's so freeing to just say, we don't have any phones in here. So, you know, it occurs to me, like, we don't let people carry their phones into courthouses. We don't let them we make them turn their phones off in other environments. You can't take your phone into the well of the U.S. Capitol. Like, there's all kinds of places you're not allowed to have a phone. And so to say that schools are no phone zones, or our houses during a fellowship time, or our churches, that these are going to be no phone zones. I think we could do that.
I think we could too. And I think we should do that. Honestly, you know, when you talk, you just mentioned very kindly our book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. And that's one of the things that we talk extensively in that book about is the idea of really setting up these no phone zones within your own family, within your own household. Mm-hmm. You know, we've always had in our family, you don't bring the phone to the dinner table. That is a time when you just connect with who is sitting around that table. You know, keeping phones out of the kitchen where so many organic conversations take place. Having no phone times, you know, where you have a block of time, an hour or two, where you just stay away from the phones. You know, the phones are a remarkable piece of technology, right? And I know that there's probably a ton of people who are listening to us right now on their phones. But at the same time, when these phones become an instrument that separate us instead of bringing us together, it's really a time to really take stock of what they are doing within our lives and try to rein that back in, because these tools are meant for connection, not for separation. And if they're separating us, then we just need to reevaluate.
Yeah, that's so good. And I need to be the person who leads in that. I can't be saying to my kid, hey, you don't need to take that phone with you on your, you know, while you're walking the dog. Well, then I don't need to take my phone with me, right? Like, exactly. I think that's I'm going to have to do it if I'm going to advocate for it. With us about the popularity of YouTube, first of all. And then how is it that people have been on YouTube long enough that now they can retire? Like, what's going on?
It's a pretty amazing phenomenon. So for anybody who doesn't know what YouTube is, and I'm pretty sure almost everybody does, but it is the most popular social network out there. Technically, it is a social network because it's meant to connect people with one another. And originally it started out as just a nice way to upload videos that you could put in your own blog, but it obviously became something so much more. And there are people who can make a ton of money by posting their own content on it. But man, just like anything else, being a YouTuber, it's work, and it's really hard work. And when you're talking about sort of dealing with all of the algorithms that YouTube wants you to pay attention to, making sure that your videos are still seen by as many people as possible, following all those little rules, I think that a lot of YouTubers, really, really popular YouTubers, are starting to step away. They're starting to say, you know what? I've had enough. Or I'm backing away. Because for most of these people, YouTube was something that they just got into because it was kind of fun. And once it becomes a job, once you're making money at it, it's just not nearly as much fun anymore. So a lot of times, let's be honest, there are only so many years that you can play Minecraft on YouTube. You know, eventually you sort of come to an end. So you have YouTubers who are really stepping away for two different reasons. One is that what they became popular for is just not as big an interest in their lives anymore. But number two, and I think this is the more important thing and maybe something we could all learn from, a lot of them are stepping away because they want to spend more time with their family. They want to spend more time with their wives, their significant others, their kids. because YouTube has become sort of this all-encompassing thing in their lives. So I think that there's place for us all to sort of look at our own lives and think about, okay, so where am I getting out of whack? Where do I need to really, where would God like me to focus in my time? And a lot of times that isn't necessarily what we are spending our time doing right now.
We're talking with Paul Acey. He serves with Focus on the Family's Plugged In Ministry. You can find what we're talking about today at pluggedin.com. There is a podcast related to the topic of the retirement of some YouTube creators. And then you can also at Focus on the Family's pluggedin.com find Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, which is a project that is comes to us in book form, but it really does aggregate tons of wonderful content in terms of how you and I as believers can sort of reclaim the time with our families away from our phones. So we're going to continue our conversation with Paul Acey here in just a moment. And yes, we are going to get to some reviews. Is there a movie out there or a show out there that's streaming that you'd like to hear a review about? Let me know. Hit me up on the text line, 877-933-2484. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. Ann texted me, and then we had a conversation on the phone. She's 86 years old, and her husband, Bob, is 96. She listens to the podcast every single day, and she gets a lot of encouragement for her walk of faith in the midst of a life that has grown difficult and weary in many ways. Ann has a Faith Radio story, and so do you. If Faith Radio is a part of your daily journey with God, we'd love to hear your story. Share how God is using Faith Radio to encourage you and help you grow at myfaithradio.com. And who knows, maybe Ann will hear your story and be encouraged as well. All right, if you don't play video games, which I'll just confess that, like, my video game exposure is like Candy Crush. Like, I don't know the whole video game world where there's these stories and people are roaming around in there taking on personas and characters. Like, I'm not in all of that. Maybe you are. There is a game out there that we want to talk with Paul Acey about. So, Paul, who's doing this? Because there's a lot of people spending a lot of time gaming, and when they're gaming, they're not playing Candy Crush.
No, that is really true. That is really true. The games that they have today are so immersive, so incredibly rich in terms of their storytelling, in terms of their world building, that they really become worlds unto themselves. I will out myself on this very show saying that yes, I do play some of those games. I have played Skyrim for way too long, Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim. And it allows you to do a lot of things, just sort of wander around this open world. One of my favorite things to do that people mock me for is you get these houses and you can get these books and all these dungeons you explore. I like to alphabetize my books, which tells you way, way, way too much about me. But you do have these really immersive worlds, and probably one of the most immersive ones that we have on the scene today is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. This is actually obviously a recreation of a game that was released way back in 1997 called Final Fantasy VII. This is part of the huge Final Fantasy sprawling series, but VII has really become this role-playing classic that people have come back to again and again. But obviously in 1997, when it was originally released, the world building wasn't nearly as robust as it is today. And so they've made several iterations of this Final Fantasy VII game, and Rebirth is the latest, and a lot of fans would say it's the greatest. Now, it has plenty of problems that go with it. As you will note, if you just go to our review on pluggedin.com, this is not necessarily a game to just sort of dive into without thinking about it. But definitely in terms of its world building, it has a lot of fans.
Okay. And so it's immersive. And when you talk about like immersive role playing games, there are some that maybe are harmless, and there's others where, you know, it's pretty dark. Sort of where are we on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth?
Yeah, so it does have, it's probably lighter than a lot of the games that you might have out there. There is tons and tons of combat, right? Almost all of these fantasy-based games involve a lot of fighting and a lot of killing. This one is going to be a little bit lighter than some of them. It doesn't have quite, you know, there are some of these games that have a huge demonic component to them, right? You deal with supernatural entities, you deal with potentially these actual demons. You don't have that quite as much within the realm of Final Fantasy VII, but you do have lots of fighting, lots of death. There's a little bit of profanity that you have to navigate as well. And there's some sensual content that is one of those things that is present in so many modern games that you just have to navigate. There is some spiritual content that you do need to be aware of. The spirits of the dead make up a huge component. But when you talk about just sort of the grand landscape of these role-playing games, you could do worse, let's just say.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Kathy's on the text line, and she says, I would like to hear a review about The Long Game.
Well, I'll tell you what, The Long Game is a great choice to hear a review for, because it's really maybe the most family-friendly thing that came out this weekend. So The Long Game stars Dennis Quaid, and it's based on a true story. And it involves these five Hispanic kids in the middle of Texas who love the game of golf. But obviously they don't have the wherewithal to play it very often, and the racism
access
of
no.
exactly there's a lot of racist attitudes, so you don't have a lot of access, but there's a new guy who comes on board. He becomes superintendent of the school, and he encourages them to create their own high school golf team. And in 1957, this golf team that was playing with used golf clubs didn't really have a great facility to play on. They ultimately challenged for the high school state championship in the game of golf. It's a really inspiring, very nice story that even if you don't like golf, there's a lot that you can draw from. This talks about dealing with racism and dealing with it with class and integrity and just pushing toward your goals. It does have more swearing than you would expect maybe in your typical PG movie, but that's really the only caveat that we would have for this film. It has a great, great message at its core. It's a very nice, sweet film that I think a lot of people would enjoy.
A movie that that's called Civil War is not going to necessarily be about the Civil War that you might be thinking about. So Kirsten Dunst is in this film. What role is she playing, and what Civil War are we talking about?
So we are talking about a Civil War that takes place in the not so distant future. Obviously, the creators of this film were really looking at our own very fractious political landscape, right? And they sort of cast that forward a bit. Now, when I say that, immediately a lot of people are going to be thinking, okay, so this is going to be a political statement on one side or another. It's really not that. Kirsten Dunst plays this photojournalist who is going through these war zones essentially to interview the president of the United States, who is the Washington, D.C. is under attack. It might be the president's last interview, and she's determined to go and see and take pictures of what she sees. So that's sort of where it sets up. We don't hear very much about the causes of this civil war, where the United States has split it into several factions. But we do hear a lot about the consequences. This is more about what anger, what strife, what sometimes our own shrillness can lead to. This is much more about consequences than causes. And it begs viewers to ask the question, you know, is this worth it? you know, what could come about it. And because of that, it makes it a very, very provocative, thought-provoking movie that really tries to play it straight in terms of the causes. That said, it's humongously bloody. There's a lot of carnage. This is a war movie, and you see everything that you would expect to see in a war movie. And because it's Americans perpetrating this violence on other Americans, I think it can be particularly jarring.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good word to sum that up. Paul, as always, thank you so much for joining us. What's something you're looking forward to this weekend?
Oh boy, that's a great question. You know what? I honestly, on my weekends, I really look forward to stepping away from the screens. You know,
I love that.
I spend so much time
garden, man. Plant a garden.
You know what? I'm putting in a French drain. Let's be honest.
Oh, there you go. Awesome.
It doesn't sound very great, but I am looking forward to it.
Oh no, that sounds like a great project. I love that. All right, Paul Acey, as always, thank you so much for joining us, giving a little window into your life there. Blessings on your construction project this weekend. That sounds awesome. Absolutely. As you are thinking about the spring, it could be that spring has already sprung where you are. It's also possible you live in a place where spring hasn't sprung yet. So I get that. Spring has sprung where I am, and it always gets me thinking about cultivating the garden, not only the garden of our heart, but, you know, the garden out there, the one that's going to produce a harvest of fruits and vegetables that we can use not only to feed our family, but the others around us. So what is the connection between growing food and growing people? How are you cultivating relationships in the community where you live? And what are community gardens, and how might we empower our own gospel witness through community gardening? Joey Lankford is going to join us next. He's the founder of Cultivate. I will send you the direct link if you want it. 877-933-2484. Let's cultivate the gospel, and let's also talk about cultivating community gardens. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. Who are you sitting down at table and breaking bread with? How is that bread getting to the table? Who's behind all that? Have you thanked a farmer lately? All of those are the kinds of conversations that we want to be provoking. Do you have a vision for your church and you as a Christian among your neighbors actually serving as a place where God might cultivate, not just the fruits of the Spirit, but real fruit, that which is going to feed hungry people. And so we want to talk with Joey Lankford about Cultivate. I'm happy to send you the direct link. That's got a 2 in the middle of it. Cul, C-U-L, the number 2, and then Vate, V-A-T-E.org. I'll send you the direct link. Just text me, 877-933-2484. Joey, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Good morning, Carmen. It's great to be here.
Okay, well, let's start with you, because your story helps lay the groundwork for the larger conversation about the vision and the ministry of Cultivate. So talk about you, talk about, the time you spent in South Africa. Like, give us a little bit of your story.
Sure. Yeah, so I grew up here in Middle Tennessee, was fortunate enough to go to college, join a family-owned hospital equipment company in my early 20s. Marry a girl from my church, start our family, and we grew the family to 3 kids by the time we had been married 10 years. And my wife came to me and said she wanted to adopt a baby. That was in 2008, 2009. And that conversation led us to going to Ethiopia and getting our daughter Bristol, who was a 10-month-old. Ethiopian little girl, and bringing her back to the United States. But through that process, the process of adoption, the Lord began to really work on me. I call it a period of holy discontentment, where I just began to be unsettled in the fact that I was doing what I was doing, and it might or might not be what I was supposed to be doing long term. That was the greatest wrestling match with me and the Lord, was like, is there more? Is there something that we're supposed to be doing, not just me, but as a family? And as Courtney and I begin to, my wife and I begin to lean into that and pray into that, God began to reveal that we would need to surrender our lives completely to Him, and that He would show us what our next steps were. Those steps led us with then four children to an organization called Living Hope on the tip of the continent of Africa. And they were serving the needs of a township called Masipumalele, which was 45,000 people on 1 square mile. And we're going to develop, or trying to develop, a training and workforce development program at the time that we got there. We landed there in October of 2010. And I remember the first time I was introduced to farming and greenhouses. There were some greenhouses right down the road from the entrance to that township. And they were being dismantled and taken down because of some escalated ground rental prices. And so the farmer couldn't afford the property anymore. And so we prayed about that and ended up buying those greenhouses. And with no experience at all, and I mean none, Carmen, I started dismantling those greenhouses and moving them to the property that the ministry owned right there at the entrance of the township. And we just started working alongside the underemployed people from that township and developing a workforce development program that allowed them to be trained with the soft skills and hard skills that were necessary to be employed in the locally owned businesses. We saw that ministry grow to 13 greenhouses with a very robust market contract for tomatoes at one of the high-end food retailers there in the area. Great relationship. It was an organization called Food Lovers Market. And those wages were turned back into the nonprofit to pay for the education of the students and for them to begin to earn a living wage while they were learning, so that they could put food on the tables for their families as they were being educated with the curriculum and training programs that we were building. And so we did that for 5 years there. My wife and I lived there for 5 years together with our family. We ended up having a baby while we lived there. So we took four and we brought back five, and we're, really feeling the winds of change blowing again in our life in 2015. I tell people, if you've, you know, felt winds of change in your life one time, it's really easy to recognize those winds again. And so in 2015, my wife and I collectively began to look at the platform that we had participated alongside others to build and see leadership growing within the African communities that we were ministering to, and begin to start turning leadership of that over and praying that God would direct us to the next steps. And, you know, little did we know that we would start looking back across the pond to our own home state, recognizing not only food insecurity, but some other very socially social injustices around Middle Tennessee in our area that we could penetrate using food. And that's how Cultivate was birthed.
I just, first of all, I so appreciate the language of being sensitive to the winds of change, being sensitive to, you know, the fresh wind of the Spirit of God, growing in your willingness to respond to that, to literally uproot your family and move halfway around the world, to allow God to grow your family in the way that, you know, that He chose to grow it, both through adoption and through, you know, the having of your, of children, you know, in sort of the more organic way. And I just, so I appreciate all of that. Again, we are talking with Joey Lankford. If you've just joined us, the ministry is Cultivate. I'm happy to send you a direct link. It is Cul, C-U-L, the letter 2, and then Vate, cultivate.org, empowering, really empowering communities that are struggling with food security, and also using it as a way to develop not just good nutrition, but but better communities. So the thing I want to talk about is really empowering through community gardens. So part of this is just like pure selfishness, Joey. I just don't mind telling you, like, right?
That's all right.
I see the green space. I see the church, the little church that's sitting, you know, it's got a fallow field next to it. Maybe it used to be a ball field and there aren't kids playing there anymore. Or, you know, it used to be whatever. It's a green space and it's in a community where, you know, there are a lot of people who could really benefit by not only the activity of having a community garden and learning that, but genuinely benefit from the healthy food that would be produced there. Can you just talk with us a little bit about maybe getting our church moving in this direction?
Sure. I didn't, you know, God reveals in his time. And so the first step of obedience for us, as I said, was moving back. And then we were able to, with the relationship that I developed with our then Governor Haslam, get some land on our ag department right here in Middle Tennessee. And so that's where we set the first. It was 8 acres that had previously been mowed literally for 45 years. And we started growing these quarter acre plots and putting some greenhouses up. And what we realized is that the community around that 8 acres started coming to the farm, started working in the dirt. We started building relationships. And the first people that we started really ministering to as far as helping them get back on their feet were addicts and people coming out of prison. So we developed a space for people that were coming out of a very difficult circumstance in their life and needed a runway to get back into life. We provided a safe place in the farm and the soil for them to get their hands dirty. But then we also began to call in volunteers, churches, schools, and they started coming and working alongside of us in the dirt. And through COVID, realized that, you know, there was a need and a desire for local food. And we saw that interest peak in a lot of the homes around the area. And so we set up a little retail store. And then that started to be of interest to the Lord started revealing all of the church networks and all of the underutilized land that churches are paying to have mowed year after year. And so we began to look at partnering with the local churches that we identified right around us. So let's say 15 miles, and we would go to them and say, can we use your land to grow food on and engage your congregants in a way that gives them, you know, life on life, the ability to really connect with somebody they would not otherwise cross paths with, so that the beauty of both lives can be shared for the greater good of everybody. You know, I think that community gardens and getting your hands in the soil with somebody else really levels the playing field on where you come from or what you've done or what you have or don't have. And you meet there on that soil. And I believe that's the reason that Jesus talks about it so much. The reason he uses it in his narrative of life is because there is a lot of life in the soil and there's a lot of rejuvenation. And there's a lot of, we've just seen some of the most beautiful testimonies of people just coming out of prison freshly and somebody running a Fortune 500 company in Nashville, meeting on a piece of dirt that was previously mowed by a church or whatever. And we've turned it into gardens and they meet there. They develop a lifelong friendship and those two relationships benefit both ways, you know, the community, because we all know that we can't live outside of community. And I think the world is moving more and more towards isolating us, creating this space for us to feel like we're lonely. But I tell you what, we can take and rethink and steward the resources of land better as a faith community. I think we'll be able to see some change in that. And I think the desire will grow within people as they get into the dirt to be communally involved in helping solve our food situation.
I like you a lot already, so I'm so glad you're here with us. That voice you're hearing is Joey Lankford. The organization is Cultivate. We're going to continue our conversation with Joey here in just a moment. I'm hoping he's going to tell us one of those impact stories, one of those stories of, you know, two people whose lives intersect, you know, by getting their hands dirty and by seeking to, you know, sow peace in their community while they're sowing seeds and literally cultivating a harvest of righteousness in their community. So could you be doing that where you are? Do you know a church that's got some, you know, fallow land. You've been mowing it all this time. Maybe you could be growing something in it. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
Back when I was in college, I invited a friend to church. Now, she had literally never been in a church before. So I tried to think of all the things that it would help to explain. We got there early and I showed her around. We got a bulletin. I told her what to expect. But when the offering basket actually came by, she held on to it, looked down, and asked out loud, "What is this?" Now, I want you to imagine trying to explain that during worship while the soloist is singing. Now, what makes this story really funny is that she held the basket. I mean, she was asking an honest question and I was honestly trying to answer, but she's holding the basket and the ushers are getting antsy. And because I had passed the basket to her, I couldn't easily take it back. So there we sat. I'm attempting to explain the collection of tithes and offerings. My friend is holding the basket. The person on the other side of her is wide-eyed, boring a hole into me. It's funny now, but I literally feel the sweat that was rolling down my back in that moment. Explaining why we support a ministry can be challenging. This is listener-supported radio and listener-supported digital media. You're listening to it via podcast, so that's made possible by the financial support of listeners just like you. During our spring fundraiser, we passed the plate. In short, we need your help. If you've never given before, maybe you could consider $1 a day. It's not actually about the size of the gift. It's about everyone doing their part to make the whole thing possible. So help us continue to share the faith by sharing in faith now. You can give right now by clicking the link in the show notes, by going to myfaithradio.com, or texting the word give to 877-933-2484. And thanks in advance.
Cultivate is growing food and growing people, seeking to not only cultivate the soil, but cultivate the soil of relationships. Joey Lankfort is here. Cultivate.org is the website, and that is a number 2 in the middle of the word cultivate. Talk with us about some of the people whose lives have intersected through Cultivate. You know, tell us an impact story so we can be drawn in, something we could take to our own church and say, hey, this happened over here. Maybe God could do something similar in our community.
Yeah, when you said that before going to break, the Lord revealed the one that's just so current right now in our lives right here at Cultivate. But, you know, oftentimes you go into church and how's your day? Good. What's going on? Nothing. You know, we're doing good, making a living. But recently in my own church, somebody I had been working out with and knowing for a year and a half pitches up at the gym and says, I've got a friend who has a son who's battling with a horrific cocaine addiction, and they can't figure out how to get him, you know, in community. He's working at a restaurant, which is very hard when you're in sobriety or trying to be sober. And his dad just can't figure out what to do. And he said, you know, I've been mentoring his dad at lunch, and we've been having every Thursday, and I've been hearing about this kid. This kid seems to be so he seems to have so much of a great future. He's just riddled with this addiction. And so through that conversation, I said, well, let's invite him to the farm. Let's invite him to the farm. You know, I only thing that I can provide and through the gardens. And I think oftentimes it is our greatest message is just come and see, you know, just come. We're not going to create an expectation, but if you want to come, you come. That gentleman, that young man decided to come out to the farm and put his life alongside some of the graduate leaders that we now have in Cultivate. And I'll tell you right now, he's 71 days sober. That's the longest Amen. He's been sober. And he's the longest he's been sober in 2 or 3 years since he went off to college. And so we celebrate him every day. We celebrate what God is doing in the sunshine and the soil and the plants that he has responsibility over, and the people that he is meeting from the local churches who are literally pitching up, and when they hear his testimony in the garden, affirm him or pray over him and give him more confidence for just that next day, that one You know, that's a big step, Carmen, for these. It's one day in a life, in the life of an addict, of a continued sobriety is a big deal. And so the more that we can put a faith community around these people and show them tangibly the love of God, the more that I think we're going to see success in them beating the demon of addiction and going on to do more of this food work in other places because of the value that it holds in their life.
It's so good. I love the stories that are posted on the website. Whoever is helping you write these stories is doing a great job. So pat them on the back today for sure.
I will. I will.
The miracle potato story is pretty great.
It was crazy.
Yeah. Tell us the miracle potato story.
Yeah. So 4 years ago, we experienced a pretty significant flood in Middle Tennessee. And it literally, we had just planted our spring crops, you know, the early crops of potatoes. We plant a lot of because they're very tangible and very usable. When people get them, they don't require refrigeration. So that flood literally wiped out our farm, Carmen. And so we went back to the drawing board and decided as a leadership team just to start from scratch, to redo the fields, to prep them again, to put our plastic mulch down and to replant. And so we started that process and replanted, and everything that we had previously planted was gone. I mean, it was all the plants, all the seedlings, everything was gone. And we began to watch our new seedlings grow. But what we realized is that under the plastic, we could see all of these other things trying to push through. And so we started just taking a little razor and slitting the plastic so that the light could get through. And we began to see, wait, maybe is that potatoes? Is that a potato growing out through the plastic? And God gave us potatoes that we had written off, that we thought were gone in the flood waters. And he exceeded the expectation of quantity that we would get off of the piece of property by just being who God is and coming through. And I tell people, you know, as Christians, it wasn't the first time that we had to deal with a flood and that we hadn't seen miracles come out of it. So that was just a miracle that we've used for encouragement every time we face something. And we're like, you remember the potatoes? You remember what God did when we didn't think we had anything left? And so that's just a real encouragement. I hope it encourages people that are out there thinking, you know, is this something that God may be calling me to do or step into? And I would just say, you know, just don't overthink what the outcome might be, but just think about being obedient in the next step.
Yeah. And maybe you feel swamped or flooded. And maybe you're yeah. wondering if the light could ever pierce through, and maybe all you need to do is give it a little slit, right? The seed
That's
of the
right.
word is planted deeply. Let the soil of your heart be fertile, and allow God to produce for himself a harvest of righteousness in and through you. Joey,
Amen.
Thank you so much. What a delight. You don't know this about me, but I live on the Harpeth River in Cheatham County.
Come on.
And so I know. So I've been trying to see, do I live close enough for Cultivate to come and, you know, and talk
yeah.
with me. So there you go.
Absolutely.
I love it. Thank you so much. We're definitely going to follow up with you. That's Joey Lankford. I'd love to send you the link and allow God to work in the soil of your heart and cultivate this in your community. Cultivate.org. The word of God is planted deeply as a seed within you. Be fertile soil. Produce for God a harvest of righteousness. Let God get his glory as he shines the light of his love in and through you. Hey, I'm coming your way. If you are in the Twin Cities or Duluth, in the Twin Cities, text the word MEET to 877-933-2484. If you're in Duluth, text the word DULUTH to 877-933-2484. Let's meet up next weekend. I'd like to connect with you. And hey, if you're just joining us in Billings, Montana, welcome to the Faith Radio Network. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know that you're out there. You can text the word WELCOME to 877-933-2484. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Mornings with Carmen LaBurge. Podcasts like this are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes to give now. And thanks.